So our presentation today is Healthcare and Homelessness, presented by Matt Julian, him, his. Matt Julian is a licensed clinical social worker that works on a social work and nurse street outreach team. Matt has a history of working with poverty, mental health, substance abuse, and healthcare-related issues. This presentation relates to our second principle, justice, equality, and compassion in human relations. So welcome. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, first, I just want to say thank you for inviting me. It's always a privilege and an opportunity to really talk about the work we do. And I say we because, yes, I'm here kind of representing oftentimes the agency I work for and the different services I'm involved in the community, but it is certainly not me. You know, it takes a whole group of folks. I wanted to just start with a touch of honesty in the sense of I always get a little anxious when I'm asked to talk somewhere. And oftentimes it's very much because I feel like I need to impress you to give you the solution and to like send you on your way to do the next thing. And that's just my ego kind of jumping in, trying to sway me off my path. And I really appreciated the reading early on, talking about how we're going to have our stumbles. And by no means have I been perfect in this journey of mine, but I have an opportunity to learn and keep moving forward. And that's been a pretty awesome experience for me. And the other thing that I always have to remind myself is that, yes, I am an expert on the work that I do, but I am a novice in many areas. And it's up to me to continue to remain humble enough to learn. And even in the area that I work, I don't know everything. So I'm going to do my best today to just share a little bit about what we're doing in the community. Some of the things that have worked, haven't worked, and maybe some hopes for the future. So with that said, to give you a little history about the health program itself. So the health program is an acronym for Helping Educate and Link the Homeless. It started in 2009. What we had then was Dr. Ranheim and a nurse, and they saw that they were seeing all these people coming in to the hospital, oftentimes without insurance, having multiple medical issues, oftentimes chronic medical issues, and they weren't getting the care they needed outside of the hospital. And they were coming to the ERs because that's where they wouldn't be turned away. So Dr. Ranheim jokes that the Affordable Care Act is what ultimately put us out of business. So after about 2 years of the program, we analyzed some data and we found that while the health program didn't necessarily reduce utilization of the ER, it reduced the costs. And part of that was because we were able to be more focused on the care we could provide, as well as provide services after they left the ER and the hospital because we had this walk-up clinic. So for those 2 years, the health program was really designed as a free walk-up clinic. It was over off of Fish Hatchery Road in the old St. Vincent de Paul parking lot. And then the nurse, so a provider would be there, you know, a few times a week to see folks, and there would be a nurse there on a regular basis providing triage services as well as doing outreach in the community to follow up with some of these folks. So after about 2011, though, they dropped the provider. And so the reason they dropped the provider was we were finding folks with the Affordable Care Act that we could enroll them in insurance. And because of the insurance, we could now help them access care. And so there wasn't as much as a focus of needing to provide for folks who didn't have a provider. It's helped connecting folks to a provider. So it was just a nurse outreach program. And for a few years, that's how it operated. And the nurse that left before me, Carlos, about 7 years ago now, he recommended a social worker. And part of the reason that Carlos recommended a social worker was that he was feeling that he was doing a lot of kind of enrolling people in insurance and just helping them navigate the system. He was doing a lot less of the kind of the nursing triage care that he thought he had done previously. So with that, they came to find me. And so I've been very happy to be there. Part of the reason I should say that they focused on a clinical social worker is still many of our folks are disconnected from services. Just because, you know, we can get folks insured doesn't mean that they're going to be able to jump in the front of the line, because there's still lines to get in a lot of services. And so they wanted someone with a LCSW for the purposes of signing off on some of these mental health related, it's called a verification of disability. And so many services around housing, some of the shelter services, a lot of the voucher services, they require what they call a verification of disability. And that can be both physical and mental health issues. The way that they describe it is, has it been kind of long-standing? Is it likely to continue? And does it affect their ability to obtain and maintain housing? And so this isn't necessarily this isn't like a state certification of disability. Someone may not qualify for disability through the federal government when we think of like Social Security income, but they may still qualify for these other services. And so that was kind of the purpose of our program. So the way that our program has come to be now is we are kind of we're an ancillary service of Meritor. We provide inpatient consulting, we provide outpatient consulting, as well as doing community outreach. So I say this in the sense of, and I'm really clear about, like when I'm working in Meritor, that we are an ancillary service. I don't want to be a substitute, you know, for what someone is fully, like what their benefits say they're fully able, supposed to have. You know, I don't, you know, yes, I want to provide people medical care, but I want them to get the best medical care they can get, which is usually in a clinic. So I say that in the sense of like this is my ultimate goal, is to get people what's called we call it a medical home. So a primary care doctor, they can go see specialists, they might have mental health related services involved, substance abuse related services, but we have a medical home for them now where they can kind of come first for some answers. But that's a big jump. So that's how our services are designed, is like we don't want to eliminate all these other services, but we want to be a part to help bridge that connection. And so I would say the principles of street medicine are about meeting people where they're at. It's about trying to remove judgment. It's about accepting folks, whether or not they're struggling currently, whether or not we agree with those struggles, whether or not we think they're making bad choices. These are things we have to remove. And I say those things because oftentimes when I speak to medical providers, we work in a system that there are inequities. And that's really hard as a person to sometimes acknowledge that, like, I am part of a system that has disparities. I do work that causes inequities. And so it's easy, when it's hard to hear that, it's easy to start blaming the person. It's easy to say, well, they made this bad choice. I offered these opportunities for them. So then it starts switching the blame. And it completely ignores the same fact that I'm struggling sometimes to be the best worker I can be, and it completely ignores that they're struggling to get through life. And so it's really important that I bring a sense of humility with me when I go. It's really important to know that although Meritor may, in these situations, have tried their hardest to offer this, this, and that, that might not be the right solution for them today. You know, my solution is not always theirs. And I have to remember that. For many folks, there's a lot of trauma around homelessness. You know, it's easy to say, you know, you look at that hierarchy of need that Maslow has, and the basic needs are always kind of like food, shelter, and water. And I used to kind of talk about that, like, how can anybody, you know, kind of go through their goals when their initial goals are food, shelter, and water? Well, to be honest, like, I can, you know, you can stand in line here today and ask me where to get food, shelter, and water, and I can direct you to places all throughout town. That's still missing a big component. You know, it's not as simple as that basic needs. It's a sense of belonging, you know, a sense of well-being, a sense of comfort, a sense of choice. Like, these are things that folks that are homeless are often missing. They're in a system that kind of tells them where to go and where to be, and hopefully someday they'll make that big jump from where they're at to, you know, being independent and living, and, you know, and then also the thing I think our system oftentimes fail is when folks do make that jump, you know, they have blips, you know, blips where the struggles kind of come back up, where mental health decompensates maybe, or just frustration set in the place that you're living. And so they don't always have the privilege of not being monitored, you know, I think it's a terrible way to put it, but I feel like the more in poverty you get in our society, the more monitoring as a community we tend to do on folks. And so that's a really hard, it's a really hard thing to kind of, to come at every day and see the stuff that's built up against folks. So I went off on a little tangent there, but so to rewind a little, the way we have operated now for the last few years is that we were in a social work and nursing, we brought a nurse back into the program. So we do both of those now. We have, there are other agencies in town that are doing with the provider again. And I will tell you that it's kind of like sometimes you don't know what you don't have until you see it. And I remember when they asked me if I needed a nurse, because we had a case management program. Its target was always kind of changing. And so they were like, we need to find something where we can put this nurse, where they can continue to do the good work that they're doing, but like not change their focus every 6 months. And so they asked, like, Matt, do you think you need a nurse? And I remember being kind of like, again, not very humble in the moment, like, I got this. I'm serving everybody just fine. You know, like, if this is, certainly I don't know medical stuff, but I am demonstrating that when I meet with a person. And there's some truth to that. So there is the truth that, like, yes, when someone comes to might come see me at the shelter or when I'm on the street and they ask me a medical question, I can say, I don't know, but we can call a clinic. And so, and sometimes that's an opportunity to get someone established with care, but sometimes it's just also an opportunity to teach them that, like, you can call your clinic and talk to your doctor's nurse. Like, they will provide us some feedback. And so, you know, but the way that always works is it doesn't always work well, you know? And so, you know, there's the reason we have the outreach program in the first place is because our systems are not designed to reach the hard-to-reach folks. And so that's often because there's no phone. That's often because their shelter might be the beacon today. It might be on the street tomorrow. It just depends on what they need. Like I said, the same things. Like, a beacon is a wonderful place. If you were there every day with 80 to 100-some people, it would be very, like, I would get frustrated and leave quite often. So a lot of folks need breaks. They need to find other places. They need to get some space. And so consistently have an outreach program that can kind of meet with folks, get an idea of their patterns of whether they're going maybe to the library or there's a particular place to hang out. That's a lot of the work that we do. So our goal is to find those folks, to work with them, to get them really to understand their providers, and to remove, like, the barriers that are getting in the way. And there's so many of those. For instance, I mean, just simply, like, so the insurance, everyone would think before that the barrier was insurance. And the Affordable Care Act is here. And I can tell you that I can get about 400 people last year, and over like 95% have insurance, or I'm able to get them insurance. But what we have seen with the data from the Affordable Care Act is people have now just kept going to the ER. Now, that's a little bit older data, but like, so right after the Affordable Care Act, they looked at this and ER utilization spiked. And because people were seeking care more often, it's just now they were seeking care where they knew they could get care because it's what they knew before. So our goal is to now help folks try to figure out, that they have other options. Because the ER, they're sitting there for urgent and emergent reasons, So sometimes for basic primary care, it's just not their area, And so we're there to try to link folks and walk them through what that would look like. I think of a guy early on, and this is, I think, a good example of the idea of like outreach versus a primary care home, is we had this gentleman, I knew him for a long time. I'd worked with him, we're cordial, we'd been building rapport, and he was seen by a medic clinic, which is a student-based run clinic in the shelters from UW, and they recommended he get a doctor, see a doctor. So he came, I saw him, we scheduled, he missed. So he went back to medic, medic called me again, I saw him, we scheduled him, he missed the appointment again. So I go out and I see him and I'm like, hey man, like, what's going on? And he's like, Matt, I stink. And I was like, what? And he's like, I know I sleep outside, that I smell. I know that children come to your clinic. I'm embarrassed. And I said, oh, well, you should have told me, And, I don't know, I'm using language to blame him. But I said, oh, well, let's work around that. And he's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, let's schedule you an appointment again. If it helps, we can get you some clean clothes. Maybe that's a day you can plan to go take a shower at the shelter. Or if you just want to come in as is, we'll accept you. I said, this is what our clinic looks like. If you tend to sit on this side, less people sit over there if that makes you more comfortable. If you want to come back to my office and wait to be roomed, you can come back to my office. And so we were able to get him in and to get services. And so for a lot of folks, our metrics would say, well, this guy just likes to no-show, or he's irresponsible. But there was really more layers to that than we would typically think. So that's the purpose of our program. I feel like it's really to try to, the idea behind street medicine should hopefully never be to replace the services. But it is a bridge. It's to go get to know someone, to see what it is that's driving them. And that's how we overcome the barriers. I think of another fella. It oftentimes, like I said, I would love to sit here and tell you what we do is rocket science, but it's not. It's just showing up. And so this is a system of folks that have often been marginalized already. They've been declined services or treated poorly. People make promises and don't come through for them. One of the things that we do to try to provide to break through some of that is we show up. So we schedule some hours. And in this situation, I'd mentioned the Beacon prior. We were going to Bethel Lutheran on a regular basis. And with Bethel, they run a day shelter a few days a week. And so I was coming there, once a week for months. And this guy had talked to me. We knew each other's names. We had conversations almost weekly. And it was about 4 to 6 months after I'd been coming there. And one day he saw, it was a slow day. I'm reading the news on my computer. And there's a little article about the Bears up in the corner. And he points out something and starts talking about football. So, I start talking about football with him. And finally he goes, so what do you do? And I remember being like, all right. So I said, well, I'm glad you asked. This is what I do. I said, I try to connect people to healthcare. I try to get them the services they need. And then he goes, oh, I should probably talk to you. And I was like, oh, well, what's going on? And so at this point, he shared with me that he had MS and that he had not received any care for years. And I said, well, let's get you into care, you know. And he openly shared, like, part of the reason he's avoiding care is he doesn't want to know how bad it's gotten. And I remember being like, all right, well, let's go through this. And so him and I, over the period of the next few months, scheduled multiple appointments that he did not go to. And I remember, like, thankfully, you know, again, our systems like to tell us, like, we need to get on this guy about missing appointments. And instead, I was remembering the fact of how scared he was. And there wasn't a lot I could do to alleviate that fear, you know? It's like, except share with him that I was there and that we'll try to figure it out, like, what happens next. And so, you know, I just kept showing up for him and being like, hey, man, you know, I saw you missed you. You want to reschedule? And he's like, okay. And so it's about the third or fourth time that he finally rescheduled and attended. And, you know, it wasn't as bad as he thought, but they did want to start some services. And so then that again does its obstacles. He needed a regular injection. It needed to be refrigerated. How can we do this? How can we do that? And it's through those partnerships that, again, going to shelters, you know, being present on the street, that we're able to kind of build these connections with folks, and that we could get the shelters to typically, who might typically in the past not have said, like, refrigeration of meds is difficult, I'll just say. But considering his, there took some planning with a nurse case manager from the agency he was working with, because he was not a Meritor patient, and then working with the shelter, and then, you know, with getting him more connected with a housing case manager, so that eventually we had this, like, this idea that yes, this is hopefully a temporary solution in the shelter system, because we know this isn't ideal. And, you know, that guy is doing pretty well. He's actually been housed for a few years. I saw him recently the other week, and, you know, he's doing great. He's stayed consistent. He's had a few, like I said, obstacles that have come up, which is not uncommon. But, you know, we move through that. You know, we can't let, you know, maybe a poor decision today affect whether or not we're worthy of care tomorrow. And I think that's the big thing about the work that we do that makes a difference is we need to approach it with the fact that everyone is worthy, you know, that these, whether they sleep on the street or in the shelter, people are deserving of humanity and housing. You know, I had the privilege of looking through your guys' principles here, and I'd have to say that those would be great things for me to carry in each component of my life. Kind of the last thing, I know that we wanted time for questions, so I think I have a few more minutes, but then one of the things I wanted to touch on is based off a quote. And I say this in the sense of, it struck with me. So this is a quote from Robin DiAngelo from the book White Fragility. You know, Robin speaks about, throughout her book, about how she has been an educator on, you know, racial inequities her whole life. And she's also very self-reflective throughout this book of, like, where she's made mistakes. And so she ends the book by saying, I've been engaged in this work for many years, and I continue to receive feedback on my stubborn patterns and unexamined assumptions. It is a messy, lifelong process, but one that is necessary to align my professed values with my real actions. It is also deeply compelling and transformative. So that's the quote from Robin. And the way, what I usually try to take from that is like, it's, I oftentimes tell folks I'm an optimistic cynic. And I say that because we're in these systems. We are in these systems that are actively harming people today. But I'm optimistic because I've never met someone in this system that is looking to harm someone today. You know, I see hope. You know, I see I see an opportunity for love with a lot of the folks that I work with professionally, at work, but in the community. I'm inspired on a regular basis. And so I really like Robin's analogy there, is that in the sense that, like, I have to continue to see criticism. I need to continue to listen to it, to bring it into my life. But then I also need to make changes. I can't rest on my laurels of that my intentions were simply to do good. And when I look back at my life, I've been on the wrong side of history with many of my opinions. And that can define me today as a person. Or I can look back and be fortunate that I had friends, coworkers, I've had patients that have taught me to see things in a different way. And so just by trying to be open to some of that criticism, but again, find that compassion, that empathy, is really what I strive towards. I should probably end, but I guess I'll make one more note. And I've read a few books lately, in these books, there's been some similar themes. This idea of, and they use the term radical, like radical compassion and radical empathy. And when I see that, at first I was kind of like, why is this? First I was actually like, this is awesome. And then I was like, why radical? Why is it so radical for me to seek empathy with others and compassion? And, you know, in that reflection, I often see the competition that we are often put into in our lives of, you know, whether it's a title or achievements or yada, yada, yada. And so it kind of goes against some of that grain, you know, that idea of, like, we need accolades. And instead, it's about seeing other folks. It's about understanding that I probably don't know everything that went through their heads today. I need to stop making assumptions. So it is radical in the sense that it goes against kind of my nature at times to try to prove that I'm better than someone else. But really, it shouldn't be radical at all. And it takes practice. And so I really welcome the opportunity to come speak, because it's oftentimes a great time for me to reflect on, as Robin said, what my professed values are and what my real actions are, because oftentimes those are incongruent. And so it's a good way for me to kind of reassess that and steer myself back to a better direction. So I really, like I said, I guess I'll stop rambling at this point. I really appreciate the opportunity of you guys letting me come out and share about what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. Just stay right there. It's time for our time to have discussion or questions, comments. And we have to remember, I'll take that off so you can hear me better, that we also have friends on Zoom. So we have changed our procedures just a little bit. If you have a question or comment, we appreciate your coming up so that the people on Zoom can see who's talking. Remember to introduce yourself and share your pronouns, because that's very inclusive. And for the people who are on Zoom, if you want to ask a question, you can write it in the comment section. And our Zoom coordinator, who today is Mary Mullen, will read those out for you. If you're not able to or uncomfortable coming up, just raise your hand and Nancy has a mic that she'll bring to you.
I don't know, you know, like, so I'm in recovery, so I can say that. And that was what launched me kind of initially, is I was a chef. And when I got into recovery, I found that the days that I felt most at ease was when I was volunteering at a clinic that had helped me. And so And then I just wound up in it. Like, I wish I could tell you what happened, but I went back to school. I was like, I'm going to be a psychologist, and I signed up for the wrong thing and ended up with a social worker. And so then I'm like, I'm going to check with both. And then at the end of that, I was like, well, maybe I'll go somewhere else. And someone's like, well, maybe you should go to grad school. And I was like, Mom, I'm not smart enough for that. And he's like, you'll be all right. And, and so it's just been if you would have asked me, 10 years ago, I would have told you I wanted to work with adolescents that struggle with addiction, which is what, like I said, kind of brought me here. I found that I really enjoy working with folks. I am a person of privilege. I would tell you that, I don't think my parents, I'd like to tell you my parents didn't raise me to like look differently, but they also didn't have us examine it. So like throughout my life, I didn't necessarily see these things. And as I became more aware of like all of these like things that I'm supposedly an ally for and ways that I'm counteractive to them, like it's tremendously rewarding for me. So I enjoy the opportunity to continue to like learn and just feel like I have a connection, Meritor is a system, this goes for all systems. So like I said, the criticism, but like we were going to implement this no-show policy a while back, and it was pretty cool to see a lot of the staff at first from our department. We're a bunch of social workers and like nurses that love people, so like we're always like, don't do that, like this no-show policy is going to harm people. But then the doctors also said like, hey, I want to see people, like this person, like I remember I have a guy who was significantly mentally ill, chronic heart failure, distrust of the system. There was lots of reasons he didn't want to come. But when he would come, we could make drastic changes in his life. And so, like literally, we can add years to this guy's life. And so, our doctor was very much like, we'll take him when we can get him. And so I generally find that the doctors have been great. It's the business part of the systems that often tends to gear us towards, I think one of the funniest examples is usually like, Matt, this guy is over 50. You got to get him in for a colonoscopy. And I'd be like, I think we got bigger fish to fry today with him. Like, it's really cool to see. I think a lot of the doctors, they're good folks. It's a system to work within. Like I really enjoy that with the doctors. I do think we do have to work better at finding our voices, because sometimes, the social work team isn't enough, and like the doctors have more power. I do think that like I have power being like the only homeless outreach program for the hospitals in all of the area. So UW and St. Mary's call me, and I can, sometimes challenge some of their discharge planning and like help walk them through what that's really going to look like. And so it does help kind of change some of those systems. I always like to tell folks, I remember, so I was listening to a talk show, a local talk show that was reading the pamphlets of services that are available to homeless folks in our community. And they were going on and on about these services, but there was no insight to like how available those services are, and what those tend to like, what that tends to look like for someone trying to access those services. So I wouldn't be up here to ultimately debate if one service is, or one marginalized group is being served more than others. I think as a community, we need to do better. I can certainly point to some good things like that Meritor does. The work that we do is good, but we need to be better. And that goes for homelessness, that goes for the race disparities we see in health outcomes. We certainly need to do better in all of the areas. So I guess that'd be my initial response.
Thank you so much, Matt. We appreciate your talk and the work that you're doing.